Good evening, I'm Keith from Nomadic. And it's a pleasure to be here. Nervous. And I kind of got invited about 3 months ago, and I totally forgot about it. And then got a text a couple of weeks ago just to remind me, and the butterflies waiting. And then I forgot all about it again until today. I just got wrapped up in the Christmas, so I totally forgot. So I haven't scripted anything, and so which is, I don't know if that's good or bad. As you can hear, I'm not very good. Got a bit of a flu, cold, stroke, whatever it is. I think it's just as a result of me, really. I refuse to get old. I refuse to do what grown-up adults do, which is to kind of stay at home and put your feet up on the rocking chair or whatever. So I tend to try and burn the candles at both ends, and I keep forgetting that I'm too old for it, and it does catch up on me, but yeah. So I'm here, 40 minutes. 40 minutes? And I'm just thinking, that's a long time. But I do remember when my very first share that I did, kind of many years ago, I think the meeting was for about 60 minutes, and I talked for about 55 minutes. I was so petrified of stopping that if I felt that, you know, the whole place was just gonna open up, and I was just gonna fall inside of it. So I just kept talking. I guess things have changed a hell of a lot since then, really. And I kind of look back on those days, a lot of it with a lot of joy, because I really loved early days. What didn't I like about it? The whole idea of kind of getting to know people and kind of, talked about life skills earlier on, and interacting with people. I'm not very good at that. I'm not the greatest at it. But I did love the early days because it didn't have a lot. For me, it was just about staying clean. Getting to meeting, staying clean, and that's it. Lots of coffee. I smoked at the time. Yeah, I did smoke at the time. Yeah, lots of coffee, lots of cigarettes, and just chatting, it was just that really exciting period as well when I first came around. I'm not sure what it's like now because I'm not new, so I don't hang about in coffee bars like I used to. But there was a bunch of us. I've got a few friends in this room who are here, kind of support me, which is really nice. And there's lots of people in here that I know as well from over the years. So I do look back on it with fondness, but it's always that thing about the good old days, isn't it? It's the good old days, and when you really look back on the good old days, it's not always that great because I was I was petrified most of the time. Lots of times, I didn't know what Narcotics Anonymous had to offer me. I didn't even know if I wanted it. What I did know, though, is that I didn't want to go back to where I left behind. What I left behind was this carnage, dereliction, self-destruction. It was just really horrible. And I didn't want to go back to that because for me, and I remember those feelings very well, the people who've heard me talk before would know I always kind of touched on that one. I just wanted to die. Every day, I just wanted to die. I didn't have the courage to kill myself, but it was really painful. I had set out to become addicted, I'll just go back because I come from a one parent family. I mean, I did have a stepdad, but he wasn't really that kind of active in my life. So I come from a place where my mum, bless her, did give me lots of morals and lots of kind of values. I mean, she had, she's very poor, she didn't have a lot of money, she worked two jobs to pay the mortgage, but she was an upstanding woman, kind of, and kind of God-fearing woman as well. And so she went to church and that, and she did all that. And she, you know, she taught me wrong from right. I knew wrong from right. I knew what I was doing wasn't really the right thing. I just kind of got caught up in it and got involved in it because there was a lot of rebellion against what mum, against mum's lifestyle as well. When I saw mum work two jobs to pay the mortgage and come in, and she was always miserable, and I thought, I just thought, nah, I don't want that. I don't want to work two jobs and I don't want to be miserable. I kind of wish I did do what mum did, because mum's okay now. Mum's, you know, she's kind of, she set a good foundation for herself. And her misery was really based around a lot, you know, around relationship. It wasn't really about the work that she was doing or paying the mortgage. It was the relationship that she had. And you know, I kind of, I might talk a little bit more about that later on, about, you know, how that's kind of rubbed off of me. But I was very rebellious around, you know, not wanting to do the right thing. I wanted easy money, lots of women. That was kind of, just an easy life, really. And that was my goal. And I set out to do that. And within that, what happened was drugs was involved in that. Easy life, easy money, I'll give you a little bit of background about my kind of childhood, really. I was born in the Caribbean, and what they say to me when I go back to the old country, I call it the old country. When I go back there, what they say to me, if you hadn't left, you would have died by now, because it was difficult. My mum left, and she left to make a better life for herself, and presumably for me as well. I was left with my gran, so I grew up with my grandmother, and my grandmother had myself, and she had her own kids, and she had my auntie's kids, and there was a household full of kids, and there wasn't a lot of love. It was difficult. I mean, the love in the house was food, and that's how my grandmother showed love. By, you know, kind of feeding us, but she had no idea because she was never given it herself, and that's the sort of stuff that I've learned since I've been in recovery. She was never given it herself about, you know, how to love, how to offer love, what to give love, and the same with my mum as well, really, you know. I kind of really never have no clue about it, and I, you know, kind of just had to fight my way through it, really. I miss my mum. Cried for her quite a bit, and I just got really rebellious. Hanging out with the wrong people who, were doing all sorts of stuff that wasn't very pleasant, and that continued. And then I kind of came to join my mum in England, it was a real struggle. Different country, different culture. Didn't understand it. I didn't even like it to start with. I just kind of remember coming off the plane. I was going to make a joke there about the plane. Yeah, they did come by plane. Because there's that thing about, you know, we all came by the banana boat, but that's actually not true. A lot of us did come by plane. So I came off at Heathrow, and I remember just kind of opening up my mouth and smoke coming out of my mouth. But obviously it's not smoke. And I'm thinking, what the hell? I was just freaked out by it. Totally freaked out by it all. But I never fit in. My mum, as much as I'd missed her in those years that she'd gone and left me behind, when I got here, I didn't know her. She changed. She was a different person to what I had in my head. I had a fantasy in my head about my mum. You know, that didn't actually kind of lived up to when I landed. And I think the fantasy was based on a lot of what I wanted things to be like, rather than what things was really like, or how I remember things, you know, to be. And so it just started from there, really. I just, you know, didn't really fit in. Found it difficult. And I just levitated to what I always knew, which was kind of like, it's interesting. Somebody recently, we're talking about, you know, kind of addiction and so forth, and geographicals and stuff, and I think it's the same with life, really, because, you know, I mean, I know that, because I say this as well, you know, if you went to France, for instance, and to get away from using drugs, the first person you see is going to be an addict. Mm-hmm. You're going to recognise the addict, and it's, I guess, the same as when I, you know, when I came as well. I recognised the bad boys. I recognised the people who were fighting against the system, who the kind of destructiveness. I recognised that very, very early, and got caught up in that and got involved in that. So where am I going with this? And so, I mean, I never really fitted in into conventional kind of things, really, conventional way of living. And so part of the rebellion was, you know, kind of involved just kind of getting drugs. And I, you know, I did kind of throughout my early kind of 20s, teenage 20 years, I did quite successful in kind of, hustling, making money. You know, there's always that hole in the middle, isn't there? There's always that thing right in the middle. And, And I never really was able to feel that, I guess it's that loneliness, that, you know, that longing for my mother that never happened as a kid, and expecting it to happen when I got, you know, as early teenage, and it didn't happen. So that, you know, so just trying to fill that with something, drugs came, and I'd, you know, just take drugs, and it just gave me, everything that I wanted, really. Confidence, helped me to fit in. I thought I could walk on water, a lot, really. But, you know, we all understand this, and very quickly it just turned around and took everything from me as well. Took my kids, took the woman that I was with at the time, I took the house I had a business, I took that as well. I took everything. It really just destroyed me. And most of all, it just took my soul. More than anything else. And I've recently celebrated 19 years, and I was just looking back and thinking about, you know, how things have changed, and a lot have changed, and there's something that hasn't. There was this thought in my head, I guess, at some point when I got into recovery, that if I did the right thing, which is, you know, if I, you know, kind of stop doing bad things. If I did the right thing, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps and everything, and shit wouldn't happen. I would be protected by some shield. Shield of goodness. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. Stuff has happened in my recovery that's been extremely bad and extremely painful, and difficult as well. I was kind of saying to my ex earlier on, Christmas Day, I've got a son, I've actually got four kids. He's the second or last one. And this is a son that saw me in the throes of my addiction to start with. But 19 years on, and he hasn't forgiven me. for what's, you know, for the damage that's happened. And so ever so often, you know, the dagger comes out and I get pushed and stabbed in the back. I was meant to, Christmas Day was meant to kind of go and pick him up, but I couldn't make it because I was with my partner at the time and his mum. I wasn't able to manage the conflict that was going on between his mum, my partner and stuff, the uncomfortableness, and I guess that's a little bit selfish of me, but anyway, I got a text from him saying that he never wants to talk to me again, I'll never come and see him, and it still hurts. It still hurts the fact that, you know, because I try and explain to him, you know, why, but it still hurts because he's, you know, he's not, for whatever reason, he finds it really difficult to just let go, and he's seen my recovery. He's been around in the last 19 years, but it's still, you know, I guess in some ways he's still just still waiting for something. I'm not sure what that is. How long have I got?
20 minutes.
Okay. Wow. Still. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what's it been like? What's it been like for me? My drug using was just, it went on for years. It went on, you know, I started out with the weed thing. And then I don't know how we got into this, but there's a friend of mine back then, I don't see much of him now. And he went to America. I'm not sure how what is the thing, but he went to America. And he came back and he told us about this freebasing thing. He said, it's the best thing in the world. You've got to try this stuff. So he learned how to wash it up with your kind of bicarbonate thing and did all that. And I remember the very first time we did it was in the flats on Latimer Road. And it was just like, just wow, just nice. And I don't really know what happened. We started out, there was four of us. There was four of us. And we started out freebasing. And we used to be able to, because we was party hard as well, so we used to be able to kind of have the old, you know, wash up the old rock, because it wasn't crack then. It was some kind of freebasing stuff. We used to be able to wash it up, take a hit, and go out and party and come back. And this is very much like the first. And this I'm not sure whether it happened for a week or 2 weeks, but eventually that didn't happen. We never, you know, from moving from kind of just in periods of time, 3 days a week, to up a couple of days a week, just at weekends, to becoming every day. And when I say to you, it robbed everything from me, and then that's what happened, because at that point, things were quite successful in my life as well. So very gradually, very slowly, everything left. Everything went. The first thing was the partner I was with at the time. We had two children. We had a house in Fulham. You can imagine a house in Fulham, what that would be worth now. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, we had a house. That's one of my things as well. One of my main things in recovery at the minute is financial insecurity. I've got that bad, real bad. And I really try and, you know, kind of get into that thing where God will provide and it'll be okay. But I still struggle with it. I still very much struggle. But anyway, back to the kind of story. And so, kind of after, you know, kind of got in, what happened is that nightlife kind of took over, really. I started to live at night and sleep in the day. She couldn't take it. She took the kids and went to America. That was it. So I lost that. I lost them. Tried to hold on to the house for a bit. I eventually couldn't do that. Lost that. And then wasn't that long afterwards, a little business I had in Fulham, that went too. You know, eventually I found myself on the streets. I was selling people candle wax. as crack or free bass. Kind of wrap up tree bark off the tree and wrap up a clean food and send them as hashes. I was robbing people left. I put my life at risk on a lot of times. You know, I've had people put guns to my head because I got so desperate that I said to them, you know, just give me the gear and I've got a customer, and I'll just go off and smoke it. And then instead of kind of staying low, the power of the drugs has so powerful that I'd have to end up back on the patch with these people who are very, you know, it's just mad. It was mad to the point that we have got to this place where I just wanted to die. I wanted to stop using drugs for about 7, 8, maybe more years before I actually stopped. It was really painful. My life had just got into real chaos, and it was just really sad. It really hurt for that Kiefer. It's just really painful. And I got recovery in, and I found I was at that point, I'd been arrested on a daily basis. I belonged to the system. If I didn't have a court case, I wasn't in prison or something. Eventually, I found there was lots of loneliness as well. I mean, I like telling this story about I was on the 28 bus. I was going to my mum. It was once, it was a Christmas period around about this time. I had no money, no drugs, and I was in a real state. I was on the bus, and there was a light in a house on Wandsbridge Road, and I just wanted to be in there. I wanted to be in that light, in that place where there was light. Because my life was so dark, so horrible, I so wanted to die. Just that glimmer of light in that house, and I wanted to be in it, and that's how it ended up for me. And so I got this. I was in prison, and I got. I just couldn't do it no more. I had burnt all bridges, you know. When it first kind of started out, and I used to go to prison, and so I used to get visits from ex-girlfriends, present girlfriends, ex-friends, and so forth. By the last prison sentence, nobody came to see me. I was walking around and on Wandsbridge, and this goes back a bit, so some of you might not even understand this, but for me, this was one of my rock bottoms. I was walking around Richmond Exercise Yards in Browns, and that's what happened. Back then, if you were an unconvicted prisoner, you could either wear your own clothes or you get Browns. I couldn't get my own clothes because nobody was coming to see me. I was walking around in Browns, and I just thought, this is where I've got to. Fucking, it broke me. I was like, I can't do this no more. And then I kind of got involved, got caught. Someone, I don't even know how I got the support, but for whatever reason, some divine intervention happened, and I ended up seeing a probation officer or a drugs worker or something who pointed me in the direction of recovery in the prison. And the rest is history. I can't say, I took to it like Dr. Walton, and the reason I took to it with Dr. Walton, because life was so painful, like I said to you before, I didn't want to go back to where I was, so I would try anything. If you say to me then, stand on your head, twiddle your toes, and you'll get recovery, I would have done, you know, because it was really painful. When I saw step one, when I first encountered the kind of, the recovery process, I understood step one, because I used for many years when I didn't want to use. I understand powerlessness. I wanted to stop many, many years ago. But I couldn't stop. I kept doing the same thing. So I understood that. So I applied myself. I kind of remember seeing these guys in the room in this, because the NA used to come in. H and I, greatest thing ever invented in the fellowship. They used to come in, and I remember seeing these guys in this room and thinking, they were also in prison, but they had a smile on their face. They didn't look in prison. They looked, you know, like they were getting something, like the sense of freedom about them. There was something, and I just wanted to be. I wanted some of that. I didn't quite know how to get it, but I kind of put my head around the corner, and one of the guys just dragged me in there. Why don't you come in? Like I said, the rest is history. There was once before in my kind of court cases and that, where I got sent to a rehab, a place in Droxford. I won't name the place in Droxford. But it didn't work for me. There was no love. It was about kind of stripping you down and hopefully building you back up. There was lots of stripping down, but not a lot of building back up. So I kind of got on the train and started using it again. But this particular support I had in the institution was very loving, very caring. People cared. People showed me a lot, and it worked. It helped me. And I very quickly things started to kind of develop, and great, wonderful people, fellowship people. I was in jail, and I got a home leave. And you know, the gentleman just now was talking about sponsorship. The guy, my very first sponsor, he said, come and get me, pick me up on a Saturday morning, and take me to. There used to be a meeting in Brixton at 12 o'clock meeting. At the same place they got the Sunday meeting, used to be Saturday 12 o'clock meeting. To come and take me to the meeting and take me for something to eat and take me back to the prison. Wonderful. I couldn't, you know, at the time I just think, God, what does this man want? What does he want from me? I didn't get it about, you know, you keep what you got by giving it away. I didn't get it at that time. But it was such a generous, you know. And I'm getting really emotional. I've always kind of wanting that generosity of spirit. It's not something that I have very easily. I have to really work hard at it. excuse me. Often when you're in a meeting and see kind of newcomers and stuff, I don't naturally levitate to newcomers and put my arms around. I want to. It's not that, you know, but I find it really difficult. As in a lot of things in recovery in the last 9 years, what I realise is that, you know, I've come a long way, but there's lots of things that I still, you know, I wouldn't say that I am, what's the word I'm looking for, that I'm a pure recovering person. I struggle with honesty. I struggle with, like I said, generosity, you know, kind of giving. If I'm, you know, I struggle with kind of not being selfish. I mean, you just name it. I really struggle with it. I have got a lot better with it by kind of working the 12-step program and getting support and having friends around me, having fellowship and stuff. That's helped me, you know, to kind of get better at this stuff. But it's not, you know, it's not something that I do naturally. Just got me then about can't remember this guy who used to come. He died. He used to come and get me. And he died. He went back out and used, and he died. And it's really sad. That was really, you know. But I mean, he just left. He left a lasting impression on me. I tell you, I swear to God. Nobody had ever done anything like that for me before, and I couldn't understand why he wanted to do it. It was great. And one of the other things that happened was that I got at that kind of 12 o'clock meeting, there was the guys used to do kind of, I guess partly what we do here as well, give numbers out. I went back to the institution with one of them NA kind of thing with a pack of numbers, about 20 numbers on them. I never used none of them, but it was really comforting to know that, that I had it. I remember at the top of the number, I don't know anybody know it. I don't know if I should keep his anonymity or not. I keep his anonymity? Okay. He was a very prominent member of that group. I always remember. I always just see him. Wonderful. So, yeah, just the fact that I had those numbers was really comforting. There's been a lot of stuff that's really... Because, like I said, I didn't find it easy. And I'm probably one of the first black guys around at that point as well. And so that was, for me, a double whammy as well. And I don't know why it is as well. I went to meetings in Chelsea. And often, those were the meetings I went to quite often, the Church in Westminster Hospital and the one in the World's End and that. And often I'd hear people talking about stuff about that. Actually, I'm thinking to myself, God. You know, kind of stuff about, like, maybe they lost their mortgage or they lost a second home or something like that. And I think, yeah, for fuck's sake. But, yeah, no, I mean, it's all relevant. I mean, you have to remember, at the time, I'm really struggling day at a time to kind of fit into this thing. So when I hit one, you know, I remember not just, you know, I think it was a Wednesday night meeting in Clapham Common in that church. And... guy, he was a Millwall supporter, I remember, he said, anyway, he was talking about going on holidays. I was shopping in second-hand shops, just to kind of, he was talking about going on holidays, and I hated him. I was so resentful, and that's changed for me, because I kind of been... last couple of years, couple of holidays a year, so, do you know what I mean? But it just showed how far I've come, how things change and stuff. And lots, you know, I've got lots of, there's been lots of things, lots of love that's kept me here, because it hasn't always been easier. As a newcomer, I used to find it really difficult to connect with people. And I always like to tell this story as well, because it's not a story, it's a very true thing that happened. But it really touches me when I talk about it, because it just epitomizes for me what NA is about. I was in this meeting in Chelsea and Westminster Hospital. It's a lunchtime meeting up there, and I was struggling, real struggle, and I was just thinking, God, kind of used to be a kind of round table thing. And I sat on one side, and this guy smiled at me. He gave me a smile to say, it's going to be okay. You know, because I was about to leave. I'm not sure whether I'll use or not, but it was just one of those moments of somebody just giving me a little bit of love and you feeling it, telling you it's okay. And I stayed in that chair, and I'd never forget that. I'd never forget that smile. And I've had loads of that. I've had, you know, when I've just kind of just wanted to walk away from it all. Where people have, and it's, you know, I mean, it's a cliche, yeah, but it's, for me, it's absolutely real, absolutely true. People loved me enough until I was able to love myself, because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to love myself. I didn't know, because my thing was about self-destruct. That was, that's how much I love myself. I just wanted to kind of self-destruct all the time. And people just put their arms around me and told me not to. It's, you know, kept me here, kept me safe. And 90 years later, I'm still here. I've always done what I've always, been told, not to the letter of the law, but the things that I've always done, I've always come to meetings, always had a service commitment, I've always tried the best ability to help people who are struggling. And I always have a sponsor and work the steps. Let me retract that. I haven't always had a sponsor. I have always, up until, I guess, my last sponsor. I've had three really wonderful sponsors. Apart from the guy who used to come and pick me up, I've had three long-term sponsors. One of them relapsed and come back. He's back on, well back now, well time. The other one is still around, doing really well. And the other one went to Brighton. I have found it really difficult in the last 5 years to connect with sponsor. I've had superficial people in my life that, I've said, "Would you sponsor me?" And of course I will. But I've not done anything with it because I don't really know why it is, really. I really struggle at the minute. And I don't know whether it's because I've been alone for this long period of time, what it's about. I don't know intellectually, but I don't know whether emotionally I do or not, because that journey, isn't it? I kind of know intellectually, it doesn't matter whether the person is less clean than you or not, as long as they've got a good recovery. That's what you want. But I've really struggled, and it's something that I really do need to kind of do something about. Because I get reminded by people who care about me as well. My ex sometimes does that. If you stop working this program, there's that thing about the addiction, kind of doing press ups and just waiting for you. And that's been, that has been my experience where I haven't used, but my God, the addiction has got me in lots of different ways. My relationships, for instance, where I've not been honest, I've been selfish, self-centered. If I'm doing something, I'm not doing it because I'm doing it because I love it, love because I want to do it. I'm doing it because I want to get something out of it. And I need, that's the kind of thing that it's got me. The dishonesty has been the major kind of, it jumps on me all the time. And that's why I feel I really need to kind of get a sponsor. And I really need to kind of jump and work the steps again. We had this argument earlier on. I feel like I, have the principles of the steps in my life, and I try and adhere to them as much as I can. But with this stuff, I think I really do need somebody in my life to help me, guide me. I've got friends, obviously. I've got lots of close friends that I talk to, and they help me with that. But I do feel that I need, that extra, that sponsorship thing, that thing about the relationship with your sponsor, and making that work is great. How long?
Finish.
Oh. Okay. Great. I'm going to finish on this, and this is important for me. Like I said to you, when mum was miserable, she's not miserable, but it's just like, it's a hard life, isn't it? So she just, in the last, when mum says, mum was, the only time mum was always okay is if I was in prison and I wasn't, nobody knocks on the door and die. We know my mom's back in the Caribbean now. She's fine. When I go and see her, I can see the relief in my mum. My mum, when she dies, she's going to die with a relief to know that her son is going to be okay. And she hasn't always felt that. And that's something that's happened over the years. And that's been, for me, the more massive thing in the world, to know that my mum, when she does go to her grave, she go there happy. Thanks. Okay.